Veterans salutes those who served. Veterans Ride Free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of COTA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use COTA Plus. Veterans Ride Free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on COTA. Plan your ride and learn more at coda.com/trip planner.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24 month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Let's talk. Talk.
John Brown.
The Sounds of Utopia is a new book about the musicians who were persecuted by Stalin. It's by Michel Kreisler, and I'm delighted to say that Michel joins me live on the line now. Michel, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning.
Whereabouts are you? Where do we find you this morning?
I'm in my study, sitting surrounded by thousands of books, only part of my library, and I'm writing for my newspaper, NRC. So what? I've got a weekly column, which I've got to finish
this afternoon. We'll crack on though, but the listeners can't see that. But that library looks really, really quite wonderful. We don't kind of think, I suppose, very much about the musicians who were having to produce work in the former Soviet Union and what it's like to be creative in an authoritarian dictatorship, especially when you think that Stalin himself was a music fan.
Yes, Stalin always inspected all the new records and he listened to them and he could write his ordeal on them. So if it was rubbish, you could be executed for it. So many musicians and composers were completely afraid of the dictator because he could decide on their fate.
You could almost argue there's almost a book in there about great dictators and their musical taste. I'm not sure what music Mussolini liked, but, you know, Hitler was obviously, the Nazis were big on Wagner and all that oppressive music. Presumably, Stalin was looking for music that would further the Stalinist stroke Soviet aims and was good patriotic music that would get the people behind him.
Yeah, music shouldn't be too difficult to listen to. So people, especially the workers and the farmers, they should be able to repeat it, singing it when they were sitting behind their machines in the factories. So they invented rules of socialist realism in the 30s. And that was the thing that most of composers should adhere to.
And are we back to sort of Amadeus and Too Many Notes? Are we looking at that situation there?
Probably.
So when sort of the Soviet Union, you know, the Russian Revolution takes place, presumably the great composers and the living composers at the time, they're probably thinking this is going to be great. I can compose symphonies and we're going to be pushing towards a great future. How quickly do they sort of realize that perhaps utopia isn't going to be a utopia for them in terms of what they can write?
In the beginning, many of them thought they could have a great career. They would be rising stars. For instance, Shostakovich. He was a fanatic Bolshevik in the beginning years of the revolution. But finally, it turned out that his music was going to be forbidden. Much of his music wasn't be allowed to be performed. And that counted also for a rising star as Sergei Prokofiev. And who only he was, they were all from half aristocratic or bourgeois origins. So they decided that the world of Bolshevism wasn't their world. And a man like Prokofiev, he asked permittance to leave the country for some time to study in the United States. And he thought that he could stay there forever to compose the things he wanted to. But the Americans at the time, the bourgeoisie, weren't interested in his kind of modern classical music. They loved Brahms, Beethoven, Mozart, that was it. So he decided to return to his native country. And he was flattered. They promised him everything because the Bolshevik thought that great artists, great great composers were the best ambassadors for their ideology. So that's why he returned in the 30s. He stayed there, and immediately after his return, he found himself in prison. He couldn't leave the country anymore. His music was forbidden, partly, and from time to time he composed something which Stalin adored. And then he thought, now I know how to do it. But the next thing he composed was forbidden again. So we went completely mad.
It's an interesting thing, isn't it? Because, you know, all the dictatorships of the 30s and the 40s are looking to the future. It's nothing. You know, the past is all corrupt. It's bourgeois. So the new thing are, you know, giant industrial tractor factories and 5-year plans and movements and all the Soviet art, which is now quite kitsch, but all those, you know, those heroic men and women looking towards a bright future. But the music that these, especially the Russian stroke Soviet composers are putting out is challenging. It's certainly not sort of waltz. It's not folk music. It's taking the industrial experience and putting it down in a musical form. And that is for the unstructured ear, that can be a very hard listen. And so no wonder somebody who thinks they like music like Stalin says, well, you know, I can't hum along to this.
Yeah, that's true. And it's also, for instance, one of the chapters in my book is about the singer Klavdia Shulzhenko, and she used to sing about love, and then many of her songs were forbidden, and she had to sing about factories, about factory workers, and she composed a song called The Brick. And that was one of her popular songs. And then the music could pass. The notes were still the old-fashioned romantic ones, but the text should be should sound like communist songs and texts about farmers, ordinary farmers, factory workers, etc., working for the building of socialist utopia.
The other thing is that music and art can be subversive. If you've got a board saying, well, this is not Soviet enough, maybe you can find a little way of putting an oblique reference in there, something a little bit sort of controversial. Because you can't do that with other things that the dictatorships like, or authoritarians like. They love sports, because sports, you can't be subversive in sport. You either win or you lose. You know, you can't be a subversive gymnast. But the arts are kind of different. So do the Soviets quite quickly realize that they can't control or they can't influence these composers?
Yes, they found out, and there was this union of composers, the National Union of Composers, and they had to decide which kind of music was allowed to be performed. But it was also arbitrariness, because actually what you say, nobody can give the ordeal if music is Bolshevik or not. So many of the composers, they tried to do what they wanted to do, and they put some communist symbols into their music, but at the other side, they also wanted to show what fear sounded like. So it's the opera Shostakovich composed, Lady Macbeth of Bzhensk, is about dictatorship, is about fear on the people. And when Stalin was sitting in the theater listening to the second premiere evening, he left the theater after the first act. And then Shostakovich was completely hysterical, thought, okay, I'm going to be executed in the next few days.
Because if people say, well, it's only art, it doesn't really matter. But over 60 composers or 60 musicians are shot underneath Stalin. And you can say, oh, well, he during the terror, I mean, he killed thousands, stroke millions. But this has a deep, you know, this has a deep effect on the creative arts in the Soviet Union.
Yes, it's also very interesting, because I started to write about composers after I wrote a book about writers in Stalin's time, and 1,500 of them were executed. So it's much more than the composers. And when you read a novel, it's very easy to point to a sentence which is contradictory to the socialist realism rules. And for music, it wasn't possible at all. So that's why it was everywhere arbitrariness. And in the composers' union, there were the mediocre composers sitting in, giving their ordeal. And they were jealous of the talented ones. So it was very easy to send the geniuses to the concentration camps of the Gulag. And that's one of the hugest problems.
So there's an actual musical board sitting there of people who are basically sucking up to the Stalinist ideal and going, yeah. Oh, well, and if you are, you know, if you are a genius, then you've got to go by these also-rans who are jealous, who are just have betrayed their creative spirit to just be yes men to Stalin.
Yeah, and they were also afraid of being sent themselves to prison. So it's also the president of the Composers Union, Tikhon Chernikov, who was a mediocre composer, but also a very nice man. And he was shouting at his meetings against Prokofiev and Shostakovich. And afterwards, when he was off stage, he went to Shostakovich and said, I heard that you wanted to have a bigger apartment. I've got a beautiful six-room apartment for you. I didn't mean it when I was shouting at you and yelling at you on the stage. So it was also people were thinking about their career. And in Stalin's days, you couldn't refuse an offer to become president of this composers union, because when you said no, it would mean execution.
How does Prokofiev then produce music when you have that amount of fear, of terror, of paranoia? I mean, you've written about writers, you've written about composers. You know that we all know the eternal struggle of the writer in a democratic society, you know, who puts their bleeding heart on the page or on the, you know, on the musical script. So how an older school, so how on earth can they actually create with that sort of Damocles hanging over them?
Yeah, but Prokofiev, for instance, he introduced folk songs into his music. And he also went, and when it was Stalin's 60th birthday, he composed a Hail Cantata, which said, Hail Stalin, the father of the fatherland. And it's a very pathetical music. The pianist, Sviatoslav Richter, told it that the text is disgusting. But the music was very, very beautiful. And afterwards, Prokofiev thought, now I know how to write the next cantata on Stalin, and that cantata was forbidden. So it was again this arbitrariness which made people completely out of their mind.
When they were sent, if you were sent to a gulag, if you were sent to a concentration camp, was there the possibility of coming back, you know, in a few years, if Stalin had gone, okay, let's see what you've got. I hope you've learnt your lesson. Because obviously these are high profile international figures. I mean, obviously if you are a lesser composer, or a musician, then you get sent off and never heard from again. But was there sort of did Stalin perhaps have a softening? Because he's up and down as all dictators are.
Yeah, they found out, for instance, and one of the chapters is about Vsevolod Zadaratsky, who was being rediscovered a few years ago. And he was sent to the Gulag only because he was the piano teacher of the son of the Tsar. So they found out he was from bourgeois aristocratic origins. He was sent for a few years to the Gulag, but he could come back. But afterwards, he wasn't allowed to live again in Moscow or in Leningrad. He was forced to live in one of the provincial towns where he could be a music teacher at a music school. But his music was completely destroyed by the authorities. So there was no trace of his music to be found. His name was never again mentioned on theater posters. So he was more or less forbidden. And he could survive by giving music lessons. That was it. But there's also a singer, Vadim Kozin, who was sent to the Gulag for 8 years because he was homosexual. Mm. And he was there, and he was received by the wife of the camp commander, who used to be a great fan of his. So she was standing on the quay when the ship arrived, and she said, Vadim Kozin, I'm so glad that you are here in this terrible place. From time to time, maybe you can give concerts. You can, you will have your own barracks, your own piano. So you can rehearse for the concert. And then he was sitting in a theater filled with camp prison wards and with the local authorities, and they were admiring him. And even when his sentence was over after 8 years, he could go back to Moscow, but he stayed there. And also because he betrayed several other cellmates because they said negative things about Stalin. And he hoped that he would be more and more popular with the camp authorities.
I mean, if you know, it's just... Sorry.
It, it, It's human behavior in its outmost surroundings.
Because this is the thing, isn't it? I mean, the problem with dictatorships or authoritarian regimes is they make you fight against each other. And so if you have an orchestra and the timpani isn't getting on with the brass section, all you've got to say is he said something against Joseph the other day. And the next thing you know, you are looking across the Siberian wasteland.
Yeah, it's like that again in Putin's Russia nowadays. Children, they betray their parents and vice versa. Children betray their teachers or their doctors, which recently happened. So it's the dictatorship is back again.
And also, this is a particularly Russian trait, because the Russians are a people like no other, I think we can agree, and it's the way that their experience has been under, it's basically feudal, and you know, under the czars, and then we have the czarists, and then the communists come, you know, the Bolsheviks come in, and then it's the Soviets, and therefore that adds a texture to any art coming out of Russia, be it literature, be it dance, or be it composing, that is that puts that other layer, that darkness, or that cynicism, but with a ray of hope in it.
Yeah, but probably the result is also very beautiful literature and very beautiful music. So it's also the ordinary people, they're always afraid of being arrested, but the artists, they go on. And even if they know that they can be arrested the next time. So it's what I noticed when I was living in Moscow for 5 years, I always saw that people were living by the day. They thought, okay, tomorrow everything can be completely different. A life can end. So they have got a much more, how can we say, a much more intense way of living.
The, you know, here comes the Karl Marx quote, you know, religion is the opium of the people. But music can be, if you like, a morphine of the people. It can take people from above the drudgery of their ordinary lives. If you are queuing in Moscow to get something and you hear a piece of particularly beautiful piece of music, you see people busking in the street with cellos and you stop and listen, and suddenly it takes you. I always say that music is a time machine, because music will take you to a memory of your childhood, of your first date, of a great party, whatever type of music it is, you know, something that your mother used to sing while cooking a meal. And so you cannot suppress music and you cannot suppress musicians.
Yeah, it's what I noticed even when I visited the Soviet Union in the 80s. The theaters were full with people. And they always told me this is a way for us to escape from everyday life. And it's the same with literature, of course. And that's why so many Russians are so well read, or they're so well informed about classical music. It's still the same like it used to be.
So what was the chispa? What was the spark behind this one? Because people will know Prokofiev, but the other writer, the other musicians, the other composers, how did you research these people? Because a lot of them just sort of disappear. I mean, it's you have to put the Michel detective hat on for this one, presumably.
Yeah, and of course there are musicologists, academic musicologists, who write tiny parts about those people. And for instance, this Vsevolod Zaleratsky, I interviewed his son. I found out that he existed, and I tried to find his son in Moscow. He's 85 years old, now almost 90, also a composer. And he told me about everyday life when his father was sitting in the gulag. And he told me that when he was walking on the street with his mother, he was also shouting Hail Stalin. He didn't dare to talk about his father because he knew that they were continuously eavesdropped. So he could tell me everything about his father. He gave me the biography he wrote about his father. So that from that point on, I could found other traces of their lives.
Because
and of course, in Russian publications, there are lots of them. So this Klavdia Shulchenko, this singer, she is very popular on the 9th of May when they're celebrating Victory Day in Moscow. Everybody from 88 till 8 years old, they are all singing this song, The Blue Scarf, which was popular during the Second World War. So soldiers weren't even singing, shouting when they stormed onto the Germans. They weren't singing for Stalin. They were singing, shouting for the blue scarf. So that song was so popular, and it still is popular.
How, you know, it must have been terrible to be the child, to be the wife, to be the child of somebody a composer in the Gulag? Because as you said, you are constantly being watched to see that you don't have the same, you know, the same traits, the same bourgeois traits as your parent.
Yeah, they are the unknown heroes of my book. For instance, we had Zadaratsky, the wife, and she was still loving her man, still supporting her man, still trying to help him. The wife of Prokofiev, the first wife, she was arrested because she was American, and she visited parties at the American embassy. She was sent to the Gulag for 8 years in 1948 by Stalin because accused of counter of espionage or counter-revolutionary activities. And then Prokofiev was already divorced from her, but she was the mother of his two sons. He tried to help him. And that was also the moment when his eyes finally opened for Stalin's dictatorship, because when he was composing, he thought that he could escape the everyday terror atmosphere in Moscow.
When you write a book like this, and then you see where Russia is now, it must be very difficult. So we had this blooming, you know, we're probably the same age, and we remember when the wall came down and Glasnost and Perestroika, and there was this blooming of the arts, and Russians were allowed to travel, and, you know, their love of classical music. I mean, the Russian, you know, Russian singers are opera singers are amazing. And now, bam, we're back, and this is basically as bad as the old days. How do you write this, Michel, and not sort of get downhearted by what's happening?
Yeah, I still love the country. It sounds rather ridiculous, but actually I've got so many good friends, and I'm a great fan of Steve Rosenberg, the BBC correspondent. And from time to time, he puts his short videos on Facebook or on Twitter, and they are still marvelous. And then when I see Steve Rosenberg and I hear him talking about Moscow, as he says, with his Leeds accent, I know why I love Russia. So it's about the people. The political system is awful. It always has been awful, but the people, they are great. And I admire their ferocity and also their heroship in tiny fragments. My former assistant, she is, from time to time, we are by WhatsApp or by Signal, we have a conversation, and I always start to ask her how she's doing. And then she says, "We're still alive. We are breathing, we are afraid, and we're waiting till it's all over." And that gives them hope. And they're in their 40s. They're still young.
Mm. What are you hoping?
And afraid.
Yeah. What are you hoping then that people will learn? Is it the fact that the music carries on, can bring hope, that you can't crush the independent spirit of a composer, of an artist? What are you hoping that people take from the book, Michel? No.
It's that art survives, and art gives hope and gives strength. And that still, it was like that during the Tsars, it was like that during communism, and it's even under Putin. And there is one advantage, that Putin and his regime, they aren't interested in culture. So culture can go its own way still.
The book is called The Sound of Utopia. It's by Michel Krylas, who is speaking today. You can order it via our own virtual bookstore. Michel, if people want to find you online, are you on the social medias? I don't mean TikTok, for example, but can people find you on LinkedIn or Facebook or Instagram?
I'm on LinkedIn, Facebook, Blue Sky, all the things. And X, still.
Still on X. Well, there you go.
Because I forgot to follow my enemies in Russia.
The book is called The Sound of Utopia. Fascinating. Listeners, go and order it. I think you'll find it an absolutely brilliant read. It's by Michel Krylas, who we're speaking to today. Michel, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you this morning.
An honor to be with you.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
CODA salutes those who served. Veterans Ride Free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of CODA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use CODA Plus. Veterans Ride Free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on CODA. Plan your ride and learn more at CODA.com/trip planner.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.